All right, friends, now we will continue. We will continue here. Esoteric Astrology 97C. And we're going to deal with the theme of light. The entire theme of the zodiac can be approached from the angle of light and its unfolding and increasing radiance, and of the gradual demonstration of what I have called elsewhere the glory of the One. I suppose the 12 lights combine to produce in the heart and head center of the One about whom naught may be said, the glory of the One, because that's what the zodiac is. The zodiac of constellations, zodiac of constellations. It is the heart in the head center of this super cosmic logos we call the One about whom naught may be said. So light can unfold, it can increase its radiance, and different kinds of light have different directions, perhaps shapes, perhaps types of use, degrees of concentration, degrees of diffusion. I think we have seen laser light as polarized light. It is directed light, quite different from the conventional light source. There are probably many manipulations of light through which we can pass. Light is, after all, matter in an essentialized form. Many things here that the fifth ray types can bring out about the true nature of light, and especially later about light esoteric. Light from levels that are not now even considered as sources of light. So thus far we deal with relatively crude sources of light. We're only beginning to penetrate the etheric plane and its sources of light, and yet light is found, or should we say light is, in all its configurations, the many planes and subplanes which are far interior to the etheric physical level and to the etheric level where exploration is now focused. The mode of development of this inner light and this and of its externalization must remain, from the standpoint of its cosmic effects, one of the secrets of initiation, and this for a long time to come. So we're dealing here with a very abstruse subject, but we can get general ideas of the effect of the different types of zodiacal light on those who are subjected to these forms of light. It looks to me like secrets of some of the higher initiations, indeed. And he says, for a long time to come. So I suppose we're dealing with the higher initiations, especially from the standpoint of its cosmic effects. And we have to remember, the zodiac is cosmic, a cosmic structure of constellations. It will, however, not be out of place, in other words, somewhat useful, if I were to give symbolically, that is, without all of the fifth ray hyper-physical, fifth-ray hyperphysics, we might say, without all of the physical detail, certain phrases and sentences which will indicate for each sign this growth of light in light. In that light we shall see light. So within the general zodiacal light, the different forms, the 12 different forms or applications of light are growing and unfolding. That's a word he used. Unfolding and increasing radiance. And these are entities we're talking about, and the radiation of these entities, great constellational lores, and they are not yet fully developed. So just as the human aura increases in its radiance and magnetism, so will the light of these great constellational lores continue to unfold and to increase. But even now, each one of these forms of light is of a certain nature, and a symbolical understanding of the 12 forms of light can be useful, I think, in seeing the process or the processes with which such forms of light are involved, both macrocosmic and microcosmic. So it will not be out of place if I were to give you symbolically certain phrases and sentences which will indicate for each sign, really for each constellation, but okay, sign, this growth of light in light, as it is esoterically called, bearing in mind that we are attempting to express conditions connected with the soul, whose essential nature is light. And DK does give various assignments to zodiacal energy. Sometimes it seems, as in A Treatise on White Magic, as if it is operative subdiaphragmatically or personally, but at other times it works on soul and even on monadic levels. So we are speaking in terms of soul light. And we are understanding something about the soul of things by understanding nature of 12 differentiated types of zodiacal light. This soul light affects the form as evolution proceeds and produces sequentially the revelation of that form and of the nature of space-time as well as of the goal. So it looks like zodiacal, put it that way, zodiacal light is highly educative and formative and revelatory of the nature of that which is and of that which is destined. We're obviously dealing with a very high source here. He tells us that these are secrets of high initiations. He implies that. So we will gather from what he says what we can. For Aries, we have the light of life itself. Aries, we have seen, is identified with the life aspect. It's also identified with the will aspect, and sometimes we must, I think, differentiate life from will. Life is being, is essence, is substance, the ultimate substance or substance, and then the three aspects emanate from it, but the first aspect of substance, or the first aspect of life, is most closely identified with life itself. And this is the light of life itself in no matter how reduced a form it is expressing at this time in the development of our solar system or of our local one about whom not you said. We don't know how fully developed or undeveloped our one about whom not may be said may be. We have some idea that our solar logos is halfway through his present evolutionary process and that our planetary logos is about the same, halfway through his present incarnation, but and maybe a good way through his total development as a planetary logos, but cosmic initiations do lie ahead. So this is, at least at the moment, a dim point of light found at the center of the cycle of manifestation, and I suppose this is cosmic manifestation because we're dealing with cosmic entities. Cosmic manifestation. At the present stage of the unfoldment of the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, it is a faint and flickering light. This is a dim point of light found at the center of the cycle of manifestation, faint and flickering. It is the search light of the Logos, anticipating, seeking that which can be used for divine expression. So let's just say our local super, what if I do the super cosmic Logos? Yes. Our local super cosmic Logos is apparently still very much in process. No matter how great these beings may be, their present incarnations run a certain cycle, and they can be in early, middle, or late phases of those cycles. So substance, entities, formations can be used, and this type of light in Aries is anticipating the future in which the purpose will be fully manifested. Aries is identified with the archetype, being ruled so strongly by Uranus hierarchically, and is searching out that which can be used for divine expression to make the archetype a manifested reality. These are, you know, symbolic presentations here. Like I say, the metaphysical hyperphysics, hyperphysics, which would be needed to really describe the nature of what's going on these cosmic levels, is far beyond us, and apparently is an aspect of very high initiations. Taurus, the penetrating light of the path. Penetrating what? Penetrating glamour, illusion, Maya. This is a beam of light. It's not a dim point searching out in an anticipatory fashion that which may be used for the cosmic construction and for the embodiment of the archetype over which Aries often presides. This is a beam of light streaming forth from the point in Aries. So notice, notice the connection of one to another. Maybe it's really one form of evolving light in 12 different aspects, and revealing the area of light control. One is reminded of the sixth ray and the idealism of the sixth ray, the highest light controls. One is always reminded, also reminded in Taurus, that the highest form of aspirational idealism is found in this sign. Aspirational idealism, the control of the highest light. This is light upon the path. And when there is an obstacle, such as glamours, they give way before this beam of focused light. One almost thinks here of the Ajna Center. One thinks of the brow and the Ajna Center. And that beam of rather fifth ray light, which goes forth from that center and dissipates glamour, and I suppose can be used in the dispelling of illusion. So as we are treading the path, this light of Taurus is very important. It sheds light on our next step, but it is also used as a kind of weapon to disperse Maya, to dissipate glamour, to dispel illusion, although the application, I suppose, is most in the realm of glamour. It is now formed a beam, and it streams forth. It connects. It's the second type of light, and the number 2 is a connector, and a beam connects. A point does not. So it's a point, dim for now, but not to be dim later. The point has more to do with the first ray, and the beam with the second ray. At least the second sign is here involved. And as we tread the path, we control the events and confrontations upon the path through the use of this beam of light, showing us what the truth may be, and helping us be rid of opaqueness, veils, obstacles, things that would dampen the light. We go on to Gemini. We have here the light of interplay. And this is a line of light beams. Notice there's diversity here. With Gemini enters diversity. Revealing that which opposes, or the basic duality of manifestation. There is a basic duality. Things have been divided in two. Suppose we live in a dualistic, apparently dualistic universe, and that duality has to be resolved. But the idea that there is unity and diversity is found in Gemini. There is the unity of the line and the diversity of the beams. There is unity in diversity, or diversity in unity. And it reveals the basic subject-object dualism. It reveals the relationship of spirit and of form, or maybe of spirit and matter. It shows, it is the revealer of the poles. And Gemini gives us great understanding of relationship in our experienced universe. The oneness is, but our experience for a long time is that of duality, and even once the oneness is established in our consciousness, the practical dualism of the functioning of things within the universe persists. So it is the conscious light of that relationship, the relationship of spirit and form, usually spoken of as spirit and matter. It shows, it reveals how each aspects every other, and what each means to every other. So there is, in all the apparently divided and subdivided universe, there is interplay. The interplay of all factors with each other. Nothing that is not interplaying with every other something. And the nature of the interplay, whether intense or faint, is revealed by this type of light. The interplay, now under Gemini, or with Gemini, we can come to understand the nature of the relationship between soul and personality, and between spirit and, let's call it, matter form. Why do things divide as they do? Well, I think in one of those readings in the old Theosophical days with a certain medium, a highly intelligent woman by the name of Anna Kingsford. Something was brought forth about the necessity for multiplicity if God was not to be alone forever, or if there was to be aught else than God. Of course, this is explained in anthropomorphic terms. Why multiplicity at all? Why does the one divide? But let's just say that in general, Gemini is the revealer of the light of multiplicity, or to say, of the nature of multiplicity. And we see in DK's teaching, which is occurring, I think, very much along the Geminian line, a very strong expression of this energy, the incredible multiplicity to which he has introduced us through his writings, and yet there is such a coherency in this multiplicity and such an understanding of the relationships of the various levels, strata, kingdoms, entities, units of life. We come to understand that interplay in a way which at the present time we could not, unless we were accessing the Trans-Himalayan wisdom through his guidance. Cancer, the light within the form. It's a very dark constellation, at least at the present time from our perspective. It looks almost like a relatively faint, empty area of space between the brightness of Gemini and that area, Gemini, Orion, and Leo. So this is the diffused light of substance itself, the dark light of matter, which must be, of course, brought forth by Vulcan in relation to the moon. To be brought forth by Vulcan, which, as it is said, burnishes the shield of Mars, or extracts the full light value from any unit of light, the full light expression. It is the light awakening stimulation coming from soul light. So the units of life to be saved are crying forth, and the saving forces respond through radiation, through soul light, through the light which is characteristic of their nature, and stimulate to greater luminosity this unawakened form of light. The light value, the light intensity of the lower substance must be brought forth, and what is not illumined must be made radiant, and that which is dark must be brought into greater radiation and greater intensity of radiation. So there is the elemental substance, which is not yet shining as it will toward the latter days of our solar system or of any particular system. It must be enlightened. So there's a rather passive, unawakened quality of light here, as if Cancer rules the entire personality, which must be rendered radiant by the Leonian soul, which comes with its full radiant sun value and stimulates or draws forth the latent light within the present demonstration of dark light. So substance must be awakened through light, by light. Substance must be awakened by a greater light. The word substance is problematical. You know, it can even mean the one and only essence as being. The great substance is God, is deity, is the absolute. The great substander, you might say. But here he means the stuff of the universe in all of its various forms, and in a rather latent state with respect to its radiation, relatively dark compared to more luminous forms of substance. He means lower substance. So let's just say lower substance must be awakened to a fuller light potential, to the expression of its fullest light potential. Right now, we are not especially radiant beings, although more radiant than we were. And with the continued good offices of the Solar Angel, and with the pressure from the monad and the assistance of the members of the fifth kingdom of nature, our light value will grow. And in a way, from the Cancerian mass, we will be transformed into the radiant Leonian god, radiant in all aspects of itself. Leo, well, you know, obviously, any one of these forms of light could be used as a great meditation and developed, and research could be undertaken with respect to all that is implied. Leo, the light of the soul. Such an important theme in all of our Trans-Himalayan work. A reflected point of light logoic is as if the sun reflects the Father, right? The sun reflects the Father. And the microcosm reflects, in small measure, the solar logos. So another way is to say the soul reflects that greater sun we call the monad. A reflected point of light logoic, or divine. Logoic light is divine light. The light diffused in Cancer, in a way, a physical symbol of mass consciousness, focuses and eventually reveals a point. So this is the process of individualization. And once individualization has occurred, of individuation, coming to oneself, recognizing oneself as a responsible, self-aware, Leonian unit, self-directing unit, distinct, different from the mass, individuated from the mass. One discovers one's own uniqueness, discovery of one's own uniqueness using this light. Venus is connected here. Venus, Leo, the light of the soul. The great light value of the solar angel, stimulating the dark light of our elemental substance, and of those lower forms of life we call the elemental lords or the lunar lords, raising their level of vibration until they are ready to tread the path themselves towards individualization by passing through, let us say, the animal kingdom and then into the human kingdom. There's a close connection between those lunar lords, the animal kingdom, and the eventual becoming of a human being. Leo, the light of the soul, the light of the higher power, the light of the inner God, the Augades, the radiant Lord who suffuses our egoic nature, the light of the mental plane. maybe the cosmic mental plane when we consider the entire constellation Leo, but also the systemic higher mental plane from which the light of the soul comes forth. It is the fifth plane, and Leo distributes the fifth ray. It is our inner dominant. It is our inner director. What does this mean? I mean, can the Leo person especially cultivate the light of the soul? Can the Cancerian person particularly raise the dark light into a more radiant condition? Can the Gemini individual understand the relationship between many, many things in cosmos and the manner in which they affect each other, action and reaction? And thus it goes. To use this light, this is what we must learn to do. These are not just great things to know about, but they are to be applied. Now with Virgo, sometimes in contrasting with Gemini, we have to be distinct and careful. The blended dual light, he sometimes talks about that close fusion, which is achieved in Virgo, in the soul-infusing process. The light of Gemini is interplaying. It's back and forth. A fusion has not yet occurred, but in Gemini, light is shed each upon the other. In Gemini, there is a shedding of light upon each of the opposites. So they are understood from the perspective of the other, but not yet blending. So we have to look at Virgo as a Virgo, let's see, a sign very important for the fusion process. Sign very important for the fusion process. The two lights are seen bright and strong, the light of form, so far anyway. One faint and dim, the light of God. Well, is it the soul or is it the soul or the spirit or the combination of the two? Two lights are seen bright and strong, the light of form. One faint and dim, the light of God. This light is distinguished by a waxing of one and the waning of the other. This is characteristic of Gemini, too. The light of Gemini. There is a waxing and waning. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. There is a waxing and waning, but not the degree of fusion. It differs from the light of Gemini, and the difference is found in the fusion factor. Because with Gemini, in Gemini, there is alternation. And, yes, a waxing and waning. Perhaps spirit and matter may be involved here. I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am. There's a fusion of all three aspects in Virgo. And we don't hear so much about fusion in relation to Gemini. So in the fusion factor, it differs from the light of Gemini, but in the waxing and waning, something is shared. There is a waxing of spirit and a waning of a form. We might even say under some instances of Virgo, since Virgo rules the monadic plane, there is a waxing of the spirit and the waning of soul form combined. And it also is true that there is a spiritual fusion that can occur in Gemini under Jupiter, right? Jupiter in Gemini, the fusion of spirit and soul, whereas Mercury is the fusion of soul and personality. But we don't get the union of the three, and with Virgo we pretty much get the union of the three. I am the mother and the child. So that's the second aspect and the third. I, God, first aspect. I, matter, third aspect, am. All three fused. These are two Mercurian signs, difficult to distinguish, but perhaps there's greater intimacy in the relationship when we're dealing with Virgo. I wonder why we couldn't even call it, in a way, the blended triple light. Unless the dual light is soul-infused personality blending with spirit. But the blending factor is the one to recognize. Recognize, let's see, RCZ, the blending factor with Virgo. Let's put that correctly. And with Gemini, recognize, it's recognize the distinction, the contrast. So from recognized contrast to achieved fusion. Inverted. Sometimes some pretty keen discrimination is needed. I mean, these things are abstruse enough as they are. And when there are close similarities, it takes a very fine blade to distinguish the differences and the similarities. Libra, the light that moves to rest. Sometimes with Libra we have a stasis which has to be disturbed. And the disturbing is caused by Scorpio, as we have been told. Equilibrium is disturbed by Scorpio, which shifts the focus towards the greater light. This is a light that oscillates until a point of balance is achieved, but notice the manner in which it's oscillating, vibrating between the pairs of opposites. Is this a light which is distinguished by a moving up and down? Sometimes when we think of Libra, we think more of the horizontal level. To say, not so much the horizontal level, but the vertical. And indeed, when we talk about the usual pairs of opposites, they are a higher and a lower. They are soul and personality. So this swinging between the pairs of opposites is a swinging between a higher and a lower. You can imagine if we have the sixth ray, which tends to swing between the pairs of opposites, plus Libra. There would be quite an unstable condition, but gradually finding that which is neither of the pairs of opposites and the ability to move through the pairs of opposites, as it is said, ignoring of the pairs of opposites. Adherence to the chosen way and ignoring of the pairs of opposites will bring this blessed one upon the lighted, blessed one upon the way into the way of light, however it is spoken for the sixth ray, a blessed one. The light that moves to rest. So in the early days, a great swinging, a great contradiction, and maybe in the earlier years of a person much conditioned by Libra, the swing might be very great. But gradually, as the fifth ray takes over through Venus, there will be a stabilization of this light until the middle point of steadfastness and of reconciliation is found. And that is also a point of harmony. We are, with Libra, looking for that steadfast perspective. Now, how is it said in harmlessness, in relation to harmlessness, because it's so very Libra. If I can find that, completed point of view. So, This is in a healing rule or law. The method used by the perfect one and that employed by good is harmlessness. This is not negative or, in some places I think it says negativity. I think so. This is not negativity. Yes, you see, might be a typo there. This is not negativity, but perfect poise. There's Libra. Perfect poise at the center, because the light has moved to rest. A completed point of view as can be had at the center. And divine understanding, which is unbiased and can only be achieved at the center between the pairs of opposites. Now, obviously, that point is always rising because there is steady progress, and as the opposites move upward themselves, the point in the center of them moves up as well. So as our goals become higher, and as we achieve elevation over what had been for us the low, the opposite, the placement of the opposites moves upward in intensity, and so will this point of balance to be achieved. We have to look at that over time. One's reminded, you know, that our solar system is not static, but is moving through space, and I think what has been called the long body of the solar system, it is moving. And in a similar way, this dimension of elevation has to be looked at when we talk about the pairs of opposites and achieving a point of balance between them. Eventually, that point of balance will be on the same level as what used to be considered the higher point of the opposites. Eventually, what was the higher point of the opposites will be the lower point, and the point of balance will be far above that. So, in terms of the cross, when we think of Libra, instead of the balancing of the scales in this way, which is also true, there is this oscillation between opposites found on a vertical dimension. This light moves up and down. Sometimes high, sometimes drawn back by form. I think the spiritual will of Libra will help settle the matter and achieve this perspective, this equilibrium, this balanced point of view, this perfect poise, divine understanding. Different ways to consider Libra. Horizontally and vertically. Scorpio. This disturbs the equilibrium of Libra. We reach a point of harmonious, beautiful stasis. There's almost probably a Libran point reached in the causal body when everything is as beautiful as it can be. And then the power of death has to enter in order to liberate the spirit so that it can progressively become one with what it always has been. No temple will ever last. It reaches a position of ultimate beauty. It serves for a time and then becomes itself a prison. And the volatile essence, alchemically considered, has to be released. Scorpio, the light of day. Well, there's day and night. There are the planetary logos discovered darkness in the realm into which he penetrated. And day always lies above that. From the point of view of the cosmic physical plane, night, let's see, night is the lower three subplanes, and day, the higher four. In other words, the cosmic ethers are day, and Saturnian energy, sometimes considered black, rules the lower three denser planes. This is the place where three lights meet. It is a triple sign, interestingly enough. It's not only soul and personality fighting it out. The spirit is there as well. The light of form, the light of soul, and the light of life. That's another meaning for the M. Here we have another meaning for the M. Whoops. M is master right now. M of Scorpio. They meet, they blend, they rise. Well, Scorpio is active at the first three initiations, and at the third initiation, the light of, or the power of spirit does come in. Because the monad is asserting itself and becomes a conscious factor. They meet, they blend, they rise. And in Scorpio, we have the rising into the Buddhic light. Illusion is dispelled. The man kneels, Hercules kneels and holds the Hydra up into the air. The air is the Buddhic plane. And there, the light of day can be found, the intuition, pure reason. So day is also, let's look at it this way. Day is intuition or pure reason, infallible, revealing correctly, accurately. You know how it is when you look in the dark, shadowy, through a glass darkly, you don't see clearly, but in the intuitive realms of pure reason, you see clearly, see how things are. It's called straight knowledge. That is day. And Scorpio lifts his problem, Hercules lifts his problem into the light of infallible comprehension on the Buddhic plane, into day, where illusion dies because the truth is revealed and illusion is based upon non-truth, misapprehension. Mental formulations which are not really descriptive of truth or cannot embody truth. The rising here is just memorable. Or seems to suggest Hercules lifting the problem. All three lights are active. So the entry into the light of day, the law of disintegration, no, into the light of day occurs at the third degree. But even more at the fourth. And I've often wondered, you know, it says the peculiar testing potency of Scorpio is completed by the time we have the third initiation. But I've wondered, since it is the sign of death, and Leo, the causal body relates very much to Leo, and we know that there's a dealing of death from Scorpio to Leo, the Scorpio kills the false king, the false ego. I wondered why Scorpio can't be involved in the fourth degree. And in some of the charts of people who can be presumed to have been passing through the fourth degree, Krishnamurti, Sir Thomas More, Francis Bacon, there was Uranus in Scorpio, probably meaning something very different than it would mean for the average individual, but they're the liberation of death, in a way. The liberation of the death of the death of the illusion of the lower three worlds. So Scorpio is a very powerful sign. It's a first ray sign, I believe, as well as a fourth ray sign. Otherwise, Hercules wouldn't be identified with it. From that perspective, Pisces is a second ray sign. This we already know. The Christ is identified with that cosmic decanate, and the materiality of Taurus may suggest the third ray in some respect. Although DK tells us, in a way, you know, on the fixed cross, the third ray is the only ray that doesn't really come through, and yet the Earth, third ray Earth, is very closely connected with Taurus and the Buddha, third ray monad, and Taurus is his sign. The cosmic decanate of Taurus is connected with the third ray Buddha. So maybe there the third ray may be one of the rays connected with the sign Taurus. It's powerful, and we have to contemplate this. The union of the three. So let's just say, from a certain point of view, in Scorpio have the 3 and 1. 3 in 1. Blending of all three aspects and their empowerment to rise into the light of day. There's so much here, you know, if we ponder on these, ponder on the names of these types of light. All right, Sagittarius, a beam, again a beam. Now notice, as in Taurus, and these two signs are very closely connected, Sagittarius is the archer and Taurus is the eye of the bull, the bull's eye. The two go together, they are signs in quest of great light. A beam of directed, Taurus rests blindly until Sagittarius directs, we've been told. This doesn't necessarily mean that one is higher than the other. A beam of directed, focused light. That is the Sagittarius shooting its arrows in every direction at first seems dispersive and anything but focused, but later that is corrected. And instead of riding off in all paths at the same time, you know, the knight errant, in a way creating errors, riding on erroneous paths, finally finds the one true path. A beam of directed focused light. In this, the point of light of Aries, I suppose, becomes the beam, as it did in Taurus, revealing a greater light ahead. In that light, the light in which we shall see light, and illumining the way to the center of light. Well, something very, very anti-Chironic here, because the anti-Chironic is a beam of light illumining the way to the greatest light of the monad. So that is where the quest ends. It's interesting, these different signs in which the word beam is used. Beam. Taurus. And also, I think, Gemini, which is also involved in the anti-Chironic process with Sagittarius, a line of light beams. A beam is a connecting force and unites a source with an object. We have sometimes points, sometimes the sense of the sphere, sometimes duality, sometimes lines of light or beams of light. There is a searchlight of the Logos. It seems to search all over. It is not particularly directed. But many things have come together in Sagittarius, and the one pointedness of this sign makes it a sign of unification, of integration, aligning all the vehicles into one functioning mechanism. DK discusses in Sagittarius, we may remember, the whole process of integration, of rendering the many into one. So where is that point of light? The point of light started in Aries, and there is a relation here with Sagittarius. In all the fire signs, the decanates are ruled by the same planets. So Sagittarius isn't there yet, but it reveals that which lies far ahead. So it reveals the future, consummation. Consummation is initiation that tends to occur, certainly in relation to Capricorn, and illumining the way. Well, this is similar to Taurus, isn't it? Because Taurus was light upon the path, the penetrating light of the path. So let's just say similar to Taurus, which was the penetrating light of the path. As I say, these signs are very related, and the Earth is connected here, the esoteric ruler of Sagittarius, and although not a ruler of Taurus, deeply connected with Taurus. We're told how much Earth is connected with Taurus, the earthiness of Taurus, and the potential to illumine our planet via the Pleiades at the present time. So we're directed towards a light in which we shall see greater light. We're in a present stage of light, but it is a approaching anticipatory light, taking us into a condition in which the greater light is seen. A beam of directed, focused light. I think we can have images of these qualities of light. And when we think of the signs and of their value to us and value to humanity in general, we can think of the images, the symbolic images DK has provided us with. As I say, not the true hyperphysics, the physics way beyond the physics that can be appreciated by even our most brilliant physicists working in, at present within the ethers. Okay, takes a little while to describe this. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to go on with this, and the third, this particular program may last a little bit longer. I'm a little constrained here because there is going to be, in our Moria Federation, we have various webinars now being given by the faculty members, and we seem to have one station to present all this through, and it will be in use shortly, so I have to get off the air shortly. Capricorn, the light of initiation, a familiar term, but it's the light towards which Sagittarius directs. Sagittarius is not there yet. It anticipates. It knows the direction towards. Sagittarius knows the direction towards, but not the experience of consummation. So, Sagittarius is always the seeker. But, in the sixth ray, what can I call it? Paragraph. The, as I said, the seeker and the sought are one. Sagittarius discovers this, and there are some people who are, you know, more Sagicorns, a blend of Sagittarius and Capricorn, and they have a certain part of their life that is directing towards the consummatory experience, consummative experience, and they work their way into the Capricorn phase of their life, having sought in Sagittarius. This is the light which clears the way to the mountaintop. It's just doesn't show the way. It gets rid of the obstacles, right? Getting rid of the obstacles to illumination within the light supernal, and produces transfiguration, which is an elevation above the lower 18 subplanes and elevation above those forms, and entering into the world of more subtle form, which has produced the grosser forms of the lower 18 subplanes, and revealing the rising sun. So beautiful. The sun on the mountain top is transfiguration. Sometimes you see those images of the mountain with the sun in back of it upon the mountaintop. So this is a powerful sign of will. Initiation is not just about light, it's about power too. And Capricorn is a power sign. And Capricorn has the power to get rid of those obstacles upon the vertical way. And this is done through acts of spiritual will, controlled by Saturn. Saturn is Atmic, and therefore Capricorn has an Atmic connection, spiritual will. Eventually, the reward is given by Venus on the mountaintop. The light of the soul is resplendent, but in another way, the light of spirit is also realized, because the monad is realized at the third degree with which Capricorn is most closely identified. So the sun is the spirit as well, and the light of the spirit is revealed in Capricorn through the third initiation. So it's a blending, in a way, of the sun and of Venus, well, and of Saturn. Or we could even say a blending of the sun, Mercury, Vulcan, of Venus and Saturn. All of these are decanate rulers of Capricorn and describe the entire experience. Saturn and the sun are opposites in a way, and Capricorn and Leo are opposites, not strictly speaking, but metaphorically they are opposites in terms of their qualities. But the sun rising above the mountain of karma is a great symbol of initiation. There are different mountains and different intensities of sunlight. The sun that rises for the first degree initiate is not the same as the sun that rises for the third or fifth. But great illumination is to be had. So this is the sign which brings to us the light of initiation, which is varying degrees of the light supernal. And I'm impressed by this clearing the way, you know. There is that horn of the unicorn. I wonder who's climbing after a while. Is it the unicorn? And is the horn used to clear the way of the obstacles to that illumination within the light sublime? It is suggested to me, perhaps. Now, let's just put it like this. We are at that point where I would normally stop the program, but I just want to continue a little bit, just a little bit. EAA 87C, continuing for a few minutes, because I want to finish this section on the light. And, you know, I don't think I've ever read it with this kind of attention. As I go through this book, word for word, line for line, phrase by phrase, so many things occurred to me which did not when I've read the book many times, read sections many, many times. But this very close reading suggests associations, some of which may be of value, some of which may be entirely speculative, hopefully still of value, some of no value, but okay. We continue then. Aquarius, also a sign of initiation. The third initiation can be taken in Capricorn or Aquarius. Fourth initiation in Capricorn or Aquarius, but maybe especially Aquarius and possibly Pisces. That's the fourth. The fifth initiation, well, Capricorn can still be involved. Aquarius, in its universal aspect, can still be involved. Pisces seems important there. And Leo. And Aries. You can find ways in which the various signs of the zodiac can participate in many forms of initiation depending upon what aspect of them is drawn forth to assist with the initiation. I read something the other day where Aries was involved in the seventh initiation. The seventh initiation, Aries would become the sign of initiation, just as it is for those now taking the seventh initiation. So important hints are there, and we piece all this together patiently over the years until the complete picture appears. Aquarius, so beautiful, the light that shines on Earth across the sea. It does look like we're going to redeem the Augean stables here, cleanse them, both on Earth and the sea. Where is it going? From what direction is it coming? Is it coming from above across the sea, or is it going towards the heights from Earth, across the sea, it seems. From across the sea, this light comes. Earth can be the entire cosmic physical plane, in a way. The sea, the cosmic astral plane, and a high form of cosmic mental light may be involved here. It's not a water sign, Aquarius, and yet it involves the water imagery. It certainly involves, because it rules the lowest of the creative hierarchies, the redemptive of the redemption of the atomic elemental life. It also suggests the cleansing of the emotional nature, the sea. It goes across the sea, but if we look carefully in esoteric astrology, page 333, we see interestingly that Sagittarius, Capricorn rather, is the one who crosses the water. That's very interesting. The one who crosses the water. So there's a similarity there between what the Capricornian does. He's crossing the water towards the mental plane, and since the moon, the emotional nature, is in detriment in Capricorn, he can do this. He can subdue that emotional tendency. But there is a connection here between Capricorn and Aquarius. So the light that shines on Earth across the sea, this is the light which ever shines within the dark. And the two lower planes are the dark, but especially the lowest plane, the cosmic physical plane, or shall we even say the systemic etheric physical plane. The first thing to be cleansed by uprising humanity is the etheric level, which will help us cleanse the outer level. But perhaps we have to work, you know, because we're rather dense creatures, on the outer level. But before we can cleanse the astral plane, we have to cleanse the etheric plane. You may want to go to that meditation about rending the veils of Maya in chapter 10 under rule 10 in Rays and the Initiations. There it's cleansing the etheric plane and driving the evil back onto the astral plane, which we're not ready entirely to cleanse until we've cleansed the ether and at least stabilize our base so that it is not taken from us, and from that stabilized base we can work upon improving conditions relative to the world glamour. It's going to be a big job once Vulcan is discovered, I suspect. This is the light which ever shines within the dark, cleansing with its healing rays, healing, yes, making whole, making universal, healing, wholeness, universality, that which must be purified, rendered translucent, until the dark has gone. But I suppose the entire personality and nature of man will be involved here, because Neptune, Uranus, and Vulcan are all veiled by that moon in Aquarius, which is kind of a transfigurative moon. You know, it's purifying the entire personality and nature. And many forms, new forms of healing with subtle energies are emerging under Aquarius. So the entire personality and nature will be cleansed, but we really do have to pay attention to the physical plane, and because the moon is the ruler of the lowest hierarchy and Aquarius is there too, we will be equipped to cleanse this lowest level. So the question of directionality is here. Is it coming from across the sea? Coming from a higher place across the sea? Certainly the power to bring soul, mind, and brain together is here because it crosses the sea. It's not aggravating the sea, although it can heal much that's within the sea. It crosses the sea. It seems to link the physicality with the mentality. DK tells us of the highs and lows of the Aquarian person, and that they can be emotionally very exalted or very depressed, but it's not usually considered an emotional sign per se. It does unite the soul sphere, or the spiritual sphere, triadal sphere, with the earthly sphere, and directing great streams of subtle energy to do that. Suffice it to say, the earth will become luminous, cleansed, lightened, enlightened, and the dark will be dispelled under the Aquarian influence. Much of that will be happening. The dark will be dispelled or dispersed. Dispersed. I'm reminded of this divine Pymander, therefore let all obscurity flee before thee. This is written under the influence of the Hermes stream, you know, the emerald stream, the ray three monadic stream. All obscurity will fly before the radiant one. Earth certainly will be enlightened under this influence. We still have to figure out about across the sea. Earth has a destiny to play a certain luminous role within the solar system, and perhaps that lighted Earth will be able to shine across the sea towards the higher levels. In any case, the astral nature, let's put it like this, the astral nature will no longer prove to be a barrier to the shining light. And hierarchy ruled by Aquarius will come, and the glamours of the astral plane will provide no obstacle. The astral plane provide no obstacle to the shining of the light. It's very beautiful, deserves pondering. It's universal, it covers the entire earth. You know, the dense earth, of course, and then also the earthy nature of the planetary and solar logos, meaning the lower 18 or 21 subplanes, and maybe even the cosmic physical plane in a higher point, from a higher point of view. We have to remember that these great signs of the zodiac are constellational lords, really. That's where the energy comes from. And so they will have effect on cosmic planes through which the solar logos functions. Anyway, no barrier. The sea is no barrier. Outward from the desert, across the seas, and through the fire which separates him from the veiled and hidden door. So from earth into the fire across the sea. Pisces, the light of the world. Well, it's not only the Christ who's the light of the world, identified as the light of the world, the Buddha is the Lord of Light, light of the world, Hermes could say, the Tibetan tells us, that he is the light of the world. A very high, consummatory form of light. This is the light revealing the light of life itself. Well, we're coming to full circle. The light of the world reveals the light in Aries. The light in Pisces reveals the light in Aries, which is the light of life itself. Of course, that's also interestingly been associated with Taurus as well, I think. Taurus, the light of life, you see, even here. The light of life, but in more substantial form, Aries, the light of life, and finally, Pisces, the light of the world, revealing the light of life. It ends forever the darkness of matter, perhaps under its Pluto, the planet ruling Pisces, hierarchically the planet of the greatest darkness, but also of ridding any system of darkness, and the highest light, in a way, being Neptunian, the power of the Pisces decanate, the cosmic decanate, probably under Neptune, permeating with light from the sea of light all matter, so that its opaqueness or its non-expressiveness, non-radiatory condition is ended. We had the dark matter of Cancer, and what we really need here is the kind of light that can end that darkness, and it comes in Pisces. Neptune is involved in both signs. Neptune can veil, Neptune can reveal. So the world and all worlds will be shining with the Piscean light, and this will reveal the light of the monad. This type of light will reveal the light of the monad, which is the light of life. Within the monad at its core is the light of life. Life is something other than will per se. Will is its first expression. It ends forever the darkness of matter, so the monad has reached his father's home and has returned, and with a monadic return, that which was dark is now light. So full illumination achieved in Pisces, interesting, as Venus, the planet of illumination, is exalted, and Neptune, a higher octave of Venus, rules in a special manner. Exalted. So, if Venus has light, well, we can expect that Neptune will have even more. Otherwise, this idea of the higher octave would be meaningful. I mean, in a way, Uranus has to contain within itself everything that Mercury has, most everything, and Neptune, being the higher octave of Venus, most everything Venus has. Right, well, there's been an attempt here to lay some seed thoughts out concerning these 12 forms of light. Each one of them gives us a hint as to how to think and how to work when we are strongly conditioned in our ascendant or sun sign, or even point opposite the sun, by one of these signs. It tells us the kind of light we can bring to bear, the way we can work with light, not the direct light of those great constellational lords, but a mediated form of that light. We can work with it in our own constrained circumstances to, in general, increase the light demonstration of our lives and of our groups and of humanity as a whole. What DK says here, study of the above thoughts will reveal the symbolic story of the irradiation of matter. Exactly, until, you know, the darkness of matter is ended forever in Pisces. That is total irradiation, and the darkened one who calls out for salvation has been met by the radiation of the saving one. Irradiation of matter, of the growth of the light body, the soul body, or even the body of the monad, the growth of the light body within the macrocosm and microcosm, and finally, which always depends upon a superior agency, it seems, some saving force descending with this greater radiation, and finally, make clear the purpose of the Logos, let's just say the purpose of the Logos solar expressed in light. Different forms of light. Our Earth has become a station of light. Humanity is a station of light. There is to be a great revelation coming through the light coming from our planet, and every entity will have its own form of light, its own form of matter through which it expresses, and which it contributes to the general light body of the entire universe. So these are differentiations within that generality we call light or intensified vibration. Every vibration has its own form of light, sound, and color. And so we can differentiate as it does in cosmic fire. And within the heart and the head center of the one about whom not may be said are these 12 forms of light, which contribute to a great radiation within the head center of that great supercosmic being. in whom even the solar logos and the star Sirius and the Great Bear and all those in whom they live and move and have their being. The entire universe is to become a demonstration of light of a certain kind according to the algorithm which accompanied the flashing forth of the ray of the Absolute at the beginning of the universal process, each universal process. So we've studied 12 forms of light, and we can make it somewhat practical in terms of our own horoscope, thinking of these symbolic phrases, memorizing them. Let's go over them. Let's go over them. The light of life, penetrating light of the path for Taurus, the light of interplay for Gemini, the light within the form, or the dark light, the light within the form, unrevealed. Our body doesn't look very light, but it is, it's all light. The light of the soul, Leo, the blended dual light, Virgo, the light that moves to rest, Libra, the light of day, Scorpio, the light, a beam of directed focus light, a beam of directed focus light, different from the penetrating light of the path, but similar too. Capricorn, the light of initiation, Aquarius, the light that shines on Earth across the sea, across all matter, through all matter, reaching us from distant places, the sea of all forms of matter, matter is water, on the higher turn of the spiral, not just the astral aspect, and the light of the world. We could memorize those, and we could think of our astrological equipment and find a way to use it, use these forms of light. So anyway, at last, Esoteric Astrology, 97, and it's sort of C plus, because it's about 20 minutes longer than the usual program, and we are ending on page 330, and then beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure 98, A, page 330, and this has been today, the 4th of May, 2013. That ought to be enough. So, other webinars are coming on now, and I have to vacate, which I will now do, and continuing offering these commentaries to seed our understanding of the wholeness, the energetic wholeness in which we are engaged, so that we may more skillfully, more scientifically, more artistically live our lives in the best possible manner. Very good. And thank you for being here whenever you may be hearing this. I'm not sure when you hear it. 10 years from now, a month from now, 20 years from now, I'm not sure, but hopefully it will give you some light on some subjects that require pondering. Okay, on to the next.